research in reincarnation, trying to find out why we have talents, why we have feelings, say for one another. You know, and I know, many times you've met someone for the first time, and you feel like, why, hey, I know this person, and yet you've never met them before. Or suddenly you meet someone and you get bad vibes from them. Very poor grammar, but nevertheless that describes the feeling you have immediately. And you wonder, why? Why does this one person completely make your life mellow, the other one makes it a very angry, frustrating type of life? Is there a stem, a cause from perhaps something beyond what we can see? Well, under hypnosis, we're able to go into that phase field. And, yeah, hey, I've done over 6,000 people now from 25 different countries. And the documentation is coming up fantastic. Bill, you and I haven't talked lately about one of the cases I've been really wrapped up now since 1980 with.
You're talking about our good seaman friend.
That's right. The lady, Sharon Johnson, who, in reality, was a man who died aboard the USS Nevada at Pearl Harbor. Now, we've got tied up in this research over $33,000, and that doesn't say very much when you compare it to the hours of hard legwork researching documentations. Not only describing places that were there at that point in time, by the way, this lady's only 27 years old, but describing people who worked in those establishments. That's where it's very hard to... And if it takes us such a long time to prove her words right, how did she come up with these facts in the first place?
No way that she could have known them unless her consciousness experienced them, because
that's
she couldn't
right.
read them. And if I can go forward, some of the information that she gave you was sealed in naval records.
That's right. We had to go through John Rhodes in the house, use any kind of political pull we could come with at this point in time. And some of the things we've discovered, we've proven the Navy wrong in many, many cases. So there's no doubt in my mind that you and I have been here before. We all have. The thing is, what can we glean from this information? How can we use it as a viable tool now? Speaking to the dead or talking to those on the other side, unless we can use that wisdom that they have, that insight.
That's a great repository of knowledge and information over there, and it is time to learn how to tap it. Frank, would you stay on the line?
Oh, certainly.
And just kind of stay with us through the evening, because we want to listen to some more of these incredible recordings. Incredible is the wrong word. Incredible means not to be believed. These are things to be believed. Let's just call them astounding and amazing, and certainly historical recordings.
Only amazing, though, Bill, because we haven't heard them before.
That's what makes them amazing. We'll try to make them old hat here after a while, if we can do that. So if you'll stand by, Frank, George will stand by. I want to tell you a couple of things. We want to get back to the recordings and talk to the audience, because I'm looking at the questions that they have in front of us, for all of us, which are just amazing. But first, I want to address myself, if I can, to those of you that hold a KABC talk radio card. And if you haven't got one, let me give you the reasons why you should get one. We're going to listen to this conversation from Fred Engstrom, who died in 1830.
In the rural area in western part of Virginia.
And for those of you that have just joined us, what you're going to hear is a recording of a conversation between William O'Neill, who was a technician with George's organization, and Fred, who has been dead since, a long time. And the communication is done electronically. And you have a recording of it. If you've never heard this, it is real. This went on. It is not fabricated in the back of George's garage someplace. And this is the way that went.
Would you give me a count of 10? I'll make a change here. Now I'll say something. I'll give you a count of five.
One, two, three, four, five.
You sound more like a robot.
I do. Maybe I am a robot.
I doubt that very much. I'm going to change it back again. Now give me a count of five.
One, two, three, four, five.
Again. Yeah, I heard you. Now, wait a minute. Now give me another count of five.
One, two, and three, and four, and a five. You might have run that man. I'm having a lot of money.
Oh, boy. Okay. Wait a minute now. Talking to my wife.
Oh, that's right. You said you were married,
little boy. Okay. Oh, boy. I'm glad you have a sense of humor.
Well, if you can hear me, you'll be able to hear that because I'll make a tape of it, okay?
Okay, yeah. Oh, boy, that's right. You mentioned that. That you were married, you know, and you've been married, Bill.
About 8 years.
I have to get at you. How old are you, Bill?
I'm 63.
Oh, boy. Yeah, I thought you were maybe in your 20s.
Mentally. I feel like I'm in my 20s, but when I shave, my mirror says, "Who are you fooling, old man?"
Yeah,
it's okay, Fred. Good night.
Okay, now, I realize that the technical quality is not the best in the world, but they are very, very historic. I wanted you to hear those. Fred Engstrom had some things to say about marriage, and his last contact with physical life was over 100 years ago.
That's right. But one of the things we've learned, Bill, from these years of work is that time as we know it, serial time, just does not exist in these other realms.
Mm-hmm. Frank, you heard that? What do you think of it?
Good heavens, I think this man should be really congratulated for the hours of his life he's given to these tapes. You and I hear them, but hey, we don't see the labor, and it's got to be a labor of love.
Mm-hmm. Well, this has been a quest. You know, we're all involved in a quest, Frank Baranowski. You are, I am, George Meek is. We have so many people. There are so many things to quest after that show us that the reality of the world that most of us see is not much, and there is another world out there to get deeply involved in. Let us go to our callers right now. I know they have some questions. I think Randy is on the line. Randy?
Hello.
Yes.
Yeah, I've been waiting very long for this follow-up program, too. I'm happy you got it. I wanted to ask, I am really amazed with this research. I wanted to ask if in any of your conversations with the other side, if there's any mention of God or any relationship with God or religion or anything.
In the case of Dr. Mueller, he was very reluctant to mention the word God. He would tell Bill, "I don't want to discuss religion in any way, shape, or form." But to give you perspective on that, Dr. Mueller was on a very, very low level of existence in what we call the etheric realms or astral world. Dr. Mueller had done a number of the things in his life that he had occasion to regret when he got on the other side.
Well, he called himself a jackass, actually.
Yes, later on, after he moved up and got some understanding, he did say that I certainly was a jackass. But if I may say so, we were fortunate in a way that he did these things and wound up where he did because he was down where the energy level was such that we could reach him with the Mickey Mouse type of equipment that we had had, if he had guessed.
Well, let me put that in another word. The equipment you're dealing with is extremely primitive. In fact, probably, and you describe it well, more primitive than Alexander Bell's first telephone,
right,
which would only work in one direction for about 150 feet. So
right. Right.
You're not as far as advanced as they were with a telephone.
Right.
So you were able to reach Dr. Mueller. Now, those that have moved to the other side and have started moving up the levels that are over there, their vibratory rate increases in one way of explaining it. And
yes.
I think perhaps right now, George, and if you don't mind, Randy, I would like to have George share with you some of the words of Dr. Mueller, because you have regained contact with him, but not through the Spiricom device. You're having to do this through a transmedium. Why don't you go ahead and read those excerpts?
All right. yes, this is through a very, very special telepathic channel, a 75-year-old woman with whom we have been in contact now with Dr. Mueller for the last 8 months. At the much higher level where he presently resides. And I'm quoting now from a recent transcript from Dr. Mueller. It says, "As Meek knows, I am gradually spiritually maturing, so I now better understand more data as time goes by. Let me clarify this statement. On my plane of consciousness, we spiritually and mentally progress in pulses, sort of a cyclic pulsing. In other words, we expand consciousness, so we do not travel per se. When we here show a desire to evolve, our soul and mind pulses to that area in higher consciousness where instructors await us. I have learned to ask for a teacher on my own level of awareness, for it's stupid to try and skip grades." But now on the point that Bill mentioned about his new level of understanding, I'm skipping down later in this transcript, and it says, "I am not afraid now to ask for help. On Earth, I was a jackass. Yes, George, you can print this. I was a stubborn jackass, but being as stubborn as a mule gets you into the lower astral realms, as I found out. When I need help, I ask for help, and help is readily available. I am sure that George will be pleased to learn that I made many personality improvements. Perhaps you do not realize that when you land over here, it's not at all easy to shed old habit patterns you felt sort of comfortable with. And it's very difficult to shed habits accrued in past life experiences. Of course, the good thoughts and actions scoot you to a higher plane. Look at it. Look at the law of life as having a ledger. It has to balance. And you, every single one of you, is a personal recorder of your own cosmic diary. Don't forget that. It's folly to hang up there with stupid habits and thoughts that didn't appear at all stupid, at least to me, while on Earth, while I was fumbling around. You get a different perspective here, and as on Earth, the first requisite is a desire to progress. Do I sound like a preacher? Well, I would have to say, yes, he does, when we compare it with the level of understanding he had 2.5 years ago when we talked to him via our instrumentation.
And certainly the history of the man, which is well documented, is well known, says that he's had quite a change in personality.
So we're only basically communicating with one level of consciousness then.
That's it, in a way. Frank Baranowski,
yeah.
You there?
Yeah. I wanted to interject a thought here. With the gentleman was asking about whether there a mention of God.
Yeah, that's
right. And I feel I know what he's looking for. This is another phase of our research. Currently, this is the current number, I should say. I have now had the pleasure of speaking with 1,196 people who have had what we call near-death experiences. Many of them have actual death certificates. They were dead 17 minutes, 27 minutes. A psychiatrist in Atlanta, Bill, dead 5 hours, if you can imagine. Okay? Of those 1,196 people, 773 said something very similar. They heard a voice, don't know where it came from, said, "Stand up in the presence of your creator." I thought that word creator was rather interesting because now these are people from various walks of life, not one specific religion. Some had embraced a Mohammedan religion, some had embraced the Jewish faith or the Christian or whatever have you. but they used the word Ecclesia. It didn't say God, Messiah, Savior, Jesus, Allah, or all of these other terminologies, but the word Creator was used. And I wondered, why not God? Why Creator? I don't know. Followed by a second question, and again, of the 1,196 people, rather interesting, 812 heard the second question, which means there was a lack of about 80 people that didn't hear the first one. What have you done for mankind? Another significant question. Out of 1,100, of course, 1,196 is a small, minute number of the hundreds of thousands of people who've had these near-death experiences. But why would they hear the same thing? What have you done for mankind?
Well, I think it's significant.
Is it conscience? Is it the Christian-oriented guilt that you've got to do for something or somebody? Or is it really what you're here for?
I think it's what you're here for. The purpose of life is the evolvement of the spirit, and, of course, evolving the spirit is evolving the light of mankind.
And here I find this most significant, that you have a man here who is picking up this information, who on the other side is still trying to help mankind.
And still trying to improve along the way.
Fantastic.
Does that help your question, Randy?
Yes, it does, very much.
All right, I appreciate you getting in here with us, and thank you for hanging on as long as you did.
Thank you for your time.
We're going to take one more call, and then we'll get back to another conversation. George, you look like you have something you want to say there.
No?
No? All right.
Okay.
We have Audrey on the line. Audrey?
Yes, hello.
How are you?
I want to address my question to Dr. Mee.
Certainly.
Yes. Within your research and therefore your knowledge, I'm concerned about if you've lost a loved one who committed suicide. Does that make a difference in terms of cosmic, astral level, whatever, or possibly communication? Does it make a difference?
I'm sorry, Audrey, there was a noise here in the studio. Would you repeat the last part of that?
No, I just wonder, does it make a difference if a person has taken his or her own life?
Committed suicide.
Oh,
yeah.
My gracious, it certainly does. That's the most
non-productive
step that anybody can take. In the first place, we know beyond any shadow of a doubt that you cannot terminate life by committing suicide. That is actually a no-no, unless it's in a very, very rare case where the taking of one's life is for a sacrifice purpose, such as one of the explorers in the South Polar exploration a few years ago.
Excuse me, what I'm asking, you know, if you have lost a very loved one who has taken her life, does that change the astral level or communication? Or
yes, it means that they have not learned in this life how to cope with affairs, and they have that learning yet to do. And they wind up, I might say so, on a lower level than would otherwise be the case. There's no permanent damage. As I said, a person cannot die permanently. But our studies certainly confirm that the purpose of life is continuing mental, emotional, and spiritual growth. And sooner or later, each of us has to learn that in our own way. And the loved one that you're speaking about will have to, in due course, learn that lesson.
Taking a life is taking a life, whether it's yours or somebody else's.
Of course, that's disturbing to me to hear. So
well, there are always disturbing things in life.
But one of the great things we feel about this type of work we're doing is that in the years ahead, when the knowledge is more widely disseminated, there will be fewer cases of the type that you just talked about.
Yeah, and here in life, she was a very psychic person.
Yeah.
And had great insight, you know, but just had reached the end of her endurance, I guess.
Yeah.
Sometimes you have to look upon it. I know it sounds rather harsh to say, but that becomes a easy way out of a situation that needs to be dealt with. And people do come across some very, very horrendous things to have to deal with.
Age and illness, you know, it's hard, you know.
But don't despair. The cause is not lost. She will...
No, I would hope that she would be right up there with everybody else.
Well, everything will come around. It just may take a little bit longer.
No, I did ask her, my question. Thank you.
Thank you, Audrey, and I understand your concern.
Yeah. Thank you. Bill?
Bill, if I may comment here, a couple of people have addressed Dr. Meek. Let me say that when I got out of engineering school in the depth of depression in 1932, a doctor's degree wouldn't have gotten me 10 feet closer to the head of the soup line.
So you didn't get the doctor's
degree. I have never had occasion to go back, but I think that probably the work that I've done continuously for the last 14 years in this field gives me some creditable standing, without the doctor's degree.
You know, doctor, a doctor in front of your name doesn't necessarily mean it. It's what are and what you've done.
It's a PhD or a doctor, whatever you...
All right. Audrey, thank you so much for joining us.
Bye-bye.
Appreciate it a lot. We want to get back to another one of the conversations between Bill O'Neill and Dr. Mueller, but I want to take a little break to do that. Frank Baranowski is...
And in this case that we're getting ready to listen to, Dr. George Mueller, who died in 1967. The conversations were made in the early 80s. So that may be stretching your imagination just a little bit, but it happened. And let's listen to... Do you want to set the stage for this conversation,
yes,
George?
This final excerpt that we'll have time for tonight shows the great value of the technical assistance which was given by Dr. Mueller. You will notice very specific technical details that he is sharing with Bill O'Neill that relates to pinpointing an electronic circuit problem on the video apparatus on which he and William were working in April 1981.
All right. Bob, you go ahead and play that.
Just a minute, Doctor. Yes, I know you're here, but I'm going to cut down the volume of these other frequencies.
Very well, William.
I'm going to cut them down to a level that won't,
I'm not sure, William, but,
correcting the equipment as it went right along. That went in line with his character, nature, and personality.
It certainly was, and it was about as specific as he could be when he said to, Bill needed to put in a 150-ohm half-watt resistor in parallel with a 0.0047 microfarad ceramic capacitor. But that shows the level of communication which they had reached after several months of work with Spearcom.
We won't have time to hear it tonight, but there's another one where he got a little bit testy with Bill. First of all, he got a cheapie from Radio Shack, and he didn't like that. And another time he displayed his take charge attitude. And in researching Dr. Mueller, that was the kind of guy he was when he worked at the University of Wisconsin in his research.
Well, and then his industrial work where he had, some of the jobs he had, I found that his annual budget for his own department was $50 million a year just for the personnel. So he had to be that kind of a guy.
And it certainly came out. We hope we will have time, and we'll try to get to it. Yours is not the only work going on like this. Some work is going on in Europe, and in fact, they've done exactly what you want. You've got other minds involved in this thing, and they've kind of fine-honed the process.
That was the purpose of going public, so to speak, 2 years ago this Easter, to encourage other researchers around the world to get into the work, and we've been so happy in recent months that... Hans Otto Koenig, a German researcher, has come along now, replicated some of our work, and is getting the loudest, clearest voices of anybody in Europe. Out of some 1,200 researchers over there, his voices have been of better quality. And recently he has taken his equipment to Radio Luxembourg, and set it up under the eyes of the technicians, and then proceeded to get voices which he's been able to share with a million listeners in Northern Europe.
Now I'm getting very envious. He brings the device, and we do it live on the air, right? George, I want to talk to you about a future Open Mind show where we will try to do that, or get Hans over here with it. That one I want to do. We have time for another caller, and Donna, I think, is on the line, and she has a question about a friend of yours. Donna, welcome aboard.
Thank you. Yes, George, we've been to the Philippines several times every year since 1977, and are good friends of Joaquin Cunanan.
Yes.
And my question for you is, and I guess if it's the wrong answer, my fervent plea to you is, are there any other printed materials other than what Jack gave us with the first tape a couple of years ago with Spiritcom, and you had a little pamphlet explaining your work on that. Is there anything else in print that you have put out so that, heaven forbid, anything should happen to your physical body, we would have all of this in print?
We'll try to get him on the Spiritcom, and he can continue his work.
Right.
We have not had any publications in the last 15 months. I assume you saw the large seven-color diagram labeled In Our Father's House, There Are Many Mansions.
Inside your book, After We Die, What Then?
Yes, and
yeah.
Then the booklet, The Magic of Living Forever, with some 50 color illustrations. Did you have that?
No, I'm writing.
Yeah, well, that's something that you would very much enjoy, I'm sure.
Donna, I'm glad you asked the question, because it gives us a chance to let George tell you and anyone else who may be interested just how they can reach George and receive what information he has for them and the status of the Spiritcom development.
Okay.
What is that address, George?
Yes, if you would like any information about the materials available... or about this new foundation we have, Life Beyond Death Research Foundation, which is a membership-type corporation approved by IRS for scientific research and public education. Just send me a postcard or a letter addressed to Meek, M-E-E-K, Franklin, North Carolina, 28734, and we will be glad to send you the information as to what's available.
Franklin's not a big town, and they know George there.
Okay.
And if you missed that address, and we'll try to get it on the air again, we have it on record here for you. Just call Broadcast Information at KABC. More than happy to send it along to you. Donna, anything else on your mind before we...
Well, I was going to ask George, is there anything... We'll be going back to see Jack in early July. Is there anything printed here that I can take him to add to his collection?
Just those things.
Just those things that I referred to. I keep in touch with Jack. Jack is one of the members, 28 members that we have in 22 countries on the International Advisory Panel that is helping to guide the destiny of Life Beyond Death Research Foundation. So Jack is kept reasonably well up to date on all of our activities.
Okay.
All right, Donna?
Thank you very much.
Thank you
for your work, George.
Thank you.
Thank you for your checking in and for your interest. Appreciate it very much. Let's take a moment, Bob, and play a little bit of the tape from Europe. This is not the only place that this is going on. We won't be able to listen to all of it because our time is running short. But I wanted you to hear that It is happening all over the world. Scientists and researchers and realize that this is a great portal for knowledge and information, the likes of which we have never known before. And here is some of the European research that's going
on. In which we are able to compare the voice of the deceased co-worker of Hans Otto König, named Walter Steinökel. Walter died in July 1983, and naturally, as he was working before in EVP, we have several copies, records of his voice during lifetime. Shortly after his death, König was able to receive the paranormal voice with the name Walter Steinökel, and we are able now to compare the two voices. In this experiment, ultraviolet light was used as a carrier, and after reception by an ultraviolet sensitive photodiode, the signal was demodulated and mixed with the original ultrasonic signal produced at the same time in the lab. At first, you hear the voice Walter Steinökel as originally recorded. Now, the same voice after filtering. Now, the voice of Walter during lifetime. In this example, he was calling his deceased father, starting with, here is Walter Steinökel.
Here is Walter Steinökel. Walter Steinökel. Walter Steinökel. Walter Steinökel.
Now, in comparison,
I guess we can see that there is that amazing likeness there, George. I wish we could listen to the whole thing, but our time has run out. But the research goes on all over the world now. The portal does exist, as though that may trouble some people because of their concept of reality. But the reality of the world, as we've been trying to tell you here, is not what we see it. I know that all of this has given you some thoughts. Would you want to share them with us? In closing.
Well, it is my hope that at this Easter season of 1984, Bill Jenkins, Bill O'Neill, and I have exposed you to some rather positive evidence that your very own mind, memory banks, and personality will survive the death of your physical body. All of the evidence from our 14 years of research indicates that the funeral, which awaits each of us, is just a rebirth or a graduation into what can be a whole new and exciting world of unlimited horizons for all of the Easter weekends ahead.
And that's our Easter message for you. I hope you enjoyed it. Join me next week, and thank you, George Meek, so very, very much.